Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, Gabby here, and welcome to The Midpoint. This week, I'm joined by chef and restaurateur Monica Galletti. Now, if you're a fan of MasterChef The Professionals, then you'll know her as one of the esteemed judges on the show for over a decade. But Monica also presents Amazing Hotels on the BBC, and when she's not filming, she's putting all her chefing skills into practice at Mia Restaurant, which she owns in Fitzrovia. Monica likens being a chef to being a magician, and growing up in the food-centric culture of Samoa, she was spellbound from the start. And after training in New Zealand, she came to the UK and worked alongside world-renowned chef Michel Roux Jr. at Le Gavroche. And this is where she met her husband, David. Together they have a 17-year-old daughter, and just like me, they also share their home with three canine members of the family. So later on, we're going to be hearing all about Canicross, a new fun way to exercise with your four-legged friends. I cannot wait to hear about that. But first up, let's meet Monica. Monica, how are you? Thank you for coming on The Midpoint.
Thank you for having me. Very excited to be here.
Tell me how midlife is going. Oh, do you accept that you're in the midlife?
You know what, Gabby? I really do. I really do. I, you know, ask me when I turned 40 and I would have said, no, I'm not ready. But, you know, well into it now. So you've just got no choice but to embrace it, I think. Absolutely.
What's changing for you, do you think?
You know, I think you get more confident. And life is what it is, and you just got to make the most of it. You know, there's no going back, and accepting that means you can just move forward with your head held high.
I imagine when you say confidence, doing what you do and having got to where you've got in a very cutthroat world, it's so tough to establish yourself as a leading chef, to run, you know, your own restaurant. Then you've got your incredible TV career alongside of that. Anybody looking in would think that you had absolutely heaps of confidence, buckets full of confidence. Were there times in the build-up and the kind of journey of your career where you were faking it a bit?
No. I mean, the confidence in myself accepting that I'm getting older.
Right.
That was the biggest thing, you know. And I think in this industry, you know, I my team, I mean, they're all in their 20s, 25, 26, you know, so I always feel younger because that's the age group I'm surrounded by, you know. So heading into 40, I actually sort of a bit of a spiral, like, oh, what's going on? What am I doing? And then coming out the other side of 40, I'm actually, you know what, I'm doing pretty damn good. I'm not so bothered about my age. Yeah.
I suppose when I said fake it, I didn't mean in terms of, you know, you clearly had the ability, the drive. But I feel when I look back sometimes, I was kind of confident in my 20s and 30s, but it feels more real now. You know, maybe it's based on so much more experience and so many more learnings that I just feel more comfortable in my skin.
Yes, now. I think comfortable is the word. And actually being able to sort of look back at everything before 40, taking a breath and think, you know what, it's pretty damn good, you know. And when you're sort of grafting to make your name and to get through everything, you're constantly judging yourself to everything else and all the noise that's happening around you and in your industry, you know. And you're always questioning, are you doing as good? Is it good enough? And I think sort of getting to my age now, I'm like, yeah, I accept that, yeah, I've done a lot. It's been great. And I can enjoy it even more now.
And you don't, that's the thing, isn't it? It's accepting that things, you know, are as they are, but also having the energy and the drive to keep going, because yours is an industry, and there are a few like it, but yours is an industry where you cannot rest on your laurels. You know, you're only as good in your restaurant as the last service and the last, you know, people are very quick, aren't they, to kind of jump on any mistakes. You have to be so, you know, at the top of your game all the time. How do you deal with that kind of pressure? And has that got... have you found a way to deal with it that's got easier?
Well, I think there's always challenges, especially with running the business, you know, and then the last couple of years, you know, exceptionally difficult, and there's always issues. And I'm very hands-on with my team and everything. It's exhausting. You know, there have been times when I think, why do I do this? You know, am I still enjoying it? And I've questioned that so much so that I've found renewed energy coming into, so especially the last few months, of sort of being able to say, you know what, let's step back for a bit. You know, I want to recapture the energy and the fun. Let's change it up. You know, so in the next few months, you know, things will be changing around here. We'll be looking at doing new things. And, you know, even my daughter noticed.
Did she?
Yeah. Was it yesterday? What day are we? You know, I was like, what day of the week is it? Day for yesterday when she said, I really like how excited you are about what you're looking at changing up and doing. It's really nice to see. And even Dad came home and he was excited about the new plans, you know, and yeah. If she's noticing it, then that's a great thing. And then I'm someone who, if I'm not enjoying what I'm doing, you need to switch it up. You need to look at a different angle to make sure you continue doing so. Otherwise, you need to step away from it.
Which is what you did with MasterChef The Professionals. And it was recently announced that you're coming back. So tell me a little bit about that, because that's a really brave decision to make. And I imagine it took a little bit of time for you to come to that decision, and you didn't just do it on a whim.
Yeah, that was not easy, but I had to put everything else first. You know, when I can do television and everything else, that's because, you know, things are in balance. You know, my family are okay, the business are okay, my staff are okay. So that allows me my freedom to be able to dabble in everything else that I get to do outside of that. But last year, it was all out of sync. My family needed me, my team needed me, the business needed me. And at the crunch of it, MasterChef was going to start filming, which would have meant 3 months of complete chaos, of filming in the day, rushing to the business in the evening, trying to get time with my family, you know, so something had to give. And it was a really tough decision for me to make. But once I decided to take the year out, I knew it was the best thing for us. And actually coming back into it, feel more energetic, more excited to be back in it this year. Having that time out to refocus, re-energize, and sort everything else out.
I mean, it is obviously, it's a luxury, isn't it, when we can make those decisions in our career. Not everybody can say, right, I'm having a year off. But in terms of, I think you get to midlife and hopefully you have got a bit more kind of financial kind of background, you know, you set up a bit more in life. And a lot of people listening to this will be in that position where they're thinking of either making a big change, maybe it's not going back to something, but starting something new. And it's having the bravery to say, right, well, actually, yeah, there's another 15, 20 years in me in that industry. It's time for me to just make those changes. So if somebody was thinking that right now, and, you know, we're going to be inspired by the fact that you've done that, you know, how scared were you when you made the decision that you might not go back? Or how much did you think, yeah, I'm definitely going back? What was your mindset like? And what helped you go back?
You know, I felt like it was a decision I had to make to step back. You know, and I didn't know how the BBC would take it. And I was very fortunate that they, you know, supported that decision and gave me the year to just sort things out and life in general. I think I was just very fortunate that they saw I needed that time out.
So I suppose having that conversation in the first place is what sometimes people will be fearful
absolutely.
Of.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You just presume that, you know, the door will close. So, you know, I was ready to take that. So it was such a relief to, you know, to find out that they were happy for me to have the year out, you know, and then to sort of look at coming back, thinking about coming back, you know, after the year, I thought, do I want to? Did I, you know, do I miss it? Those were the questions, you know, and do I still enjoy it? And when it was a yes to all three, you know, it was no brainer really. So I'm just thrilled. It's been wonderful to be back.
And you feel obviously a renewed sense of purpose while you're doing it, and you've got the energy to do it. What did you, as well as giving yourself to your family and all the things that you said you felt needed you, did you do anything else for you to help your energy levels and, your mental kind of well-being in that time?
Absolutely. I saw a therapist. I've never done that before. But I also never allowed myself time to speak to someone. It was always, so busy and not even enough time to do that. And Lena was amazing in just, helping you just talk and chat and discuss things. And even then, when I started having someone to talk to about everything going on, I had a sense of guilt that I was doing that,
Really?
I even had a sense
How
of guilt.
How dare you be so indulgent? Talking about yourself.
Because I've never had so many things happening at the same time, I needed to reach out to outside help, someone to talk to with everything. That was one of the best things I did. And also refocusing my energy on me, allowing myself the time to exercise without always rushing, from one thing to another. I've always exercised, but it was always been, when I could fit it in, as opposed to getting a routine and all of that just goes to make you feel so much better about yourself. And I felt like, okay, I can face what's coming next.
And a lot of people, again, might recognize that kind of idea of reaching out to somebody else to talk to in midlife. It is often the first time that people feel that they either need to or they have insurmountable issues going on that they want to get help. Before that, what were your reservations and were they completely kind of squashed the minute you, got into it? And was it something that you think, oh, I wish I'd done this before? Or was it just about
reservations
time?
About reaching out
to
someone?
Yeah, because some people feel like they don't want to share those things beyond.
Absolutely. And that was my thing, sharing it with someone and also being such a control freak, I could solve everything. I could sort everything. I could sort problems at home. I could sort out my family abroad. I could deal with the business. I could handle my staff. I could do the traveling with my, with the hotels. MasterChef came along. I would manage it. Yes, I'm doing a book. Yeah. And I was just a master of juggling for so long. Just, I guess I also saw as a bit of a weakness, needing outside help. Which essentially is what it was, someone just to understand all these thoughts and everything that keep you awake at night, which was my norm.
So are you better at delegating now?
Oh, yeah, I don't do anything anymore.
I need to speak to this lady.
Yeah. Look at me, I'm not even a chef's jacket.
That must be a relief, though. That must feel like almost like a weight off that you've got to a place where you can feel like you can, give certain things over
and actually having validation that it was okay to have, feelings about things as opposed to, what we do is, I think when you're going 100 miles an hour, like I have been for so long, it's just bottling, holding in and going. And then things tend to blow up, and not knowing when to recognize when you're holding on to so much, whether it be the stress or emotional issues, worries in life. So being able to allow myself time to find someone that I felt first comfortable to talk to about and to open up, it's a slow process, but one where you actually slowly start to accept it's a part of your life that you need to be able to have.
Mm-hmm. And your husband, you work with your husband, you met through work, yes. Obviously. He probably knows you pretty much better than anybody, I imagine. What has he noticed has changed, or how does he feel you've benefited?
Absolutely. He's noticed because, there are things that I would not bring home. You don't want to share frustrations or issues that have happened somewhere else, and so I don't bring them home, and I would tend to be much quieter, or my family know that if I'm upset and I don't want to talk about what's happened, I sort of I bottle it in even more, so they notice I'm more chatty. I guess found a way that I can sort things out and be able to communicate those things without worrying of, it's going to upset my family, it's going to worry my family. And learning to be a better communicator has been one of the best things from having a therapist.
And in terms of the balance of the TV work now and, the restaurant, if that sounds like going from a hard day's filming on something like MasterChef into a restaurant in the evening, I mean, that is an extraordinary amount of work. Are you able now to kind of pull back and say, I'm not going into the restaurant tonight, or do you still?
Yes, I am. And all depending on how strong my team are, or if I'm feeling not too exhausted, I'll say to her, I'll message my head chef and say, listen, it's been a long day filming. How are you doing? Do you need me in tonight? Do you need a hand? And he'll be like, no, I'm fine, which has been able to. And I'd believe that they're fine.
Yeah.
Like they'd
Whereas
say to me they
didn't.
Were fine. Yeah. they'd say to me they were fine and I'd still show up.
It sounds to me like the joy is back almost. You've got kind of like so much more joy out of what you're doing. Because that, you're in an industry in hospitality that you want people to have joy, don't you? So it all kind of comes from what you can exude as well. How much of your passion for cooking, which is what got you to where you are today in all those areas, as a little girl, as a young person in New Zealand, winning competitions and leaving New Zealand, this brave, bold young woman kind of going across the other side of the world to work with a master chef himself in the UK. That was all down to your passion for food. In the midst of all that business stuff, and all the telly stuff, is that still the absolute genesis of everything? Is that the heart of it?
I think if you didn't still love that, I wouldn't have this restaurant, And that's why I'm so excited that, we're looking at switching things up and changing things up in the next few months, because that keeps that fire going. Because you think, okay, what are we going to do? What are the dishes going to be like, and then having that connection with your team to create together is such an adrenaline rush. It's so geeky, but, it's such an adrenaline rush when you're all throwing ideas together, and then see it come to fruition. So I still very much love doing that with my team.
What do you eat? Because, I love cooking, but sometimes when I'm cooking, I sit down and then I don't necessarily want the meal I've been cooking because I feel like I've almost imbibed it, through the whole process. So how do you eat on those busy days when you're not, you're on set, or is your palate kind of able to just take on, anything in a TV studio, or are you super, super fussy?
No, because first you gotta, if you're filming, you gotta think how many plates of food you're gonna eat that day.
Of course.
So that sort of plans. I mean, if Greg Wallace is a different story altogether, he just continues eating all day. Well, I tend to sort of think, okay, I'm gonna eat 8 plates of food today, and it's not gonna happen until 2:30. So I try and snack, it starts off really good. And then by the last hour, you're just like shoveling everything in. But, I love things like dark chocolate. I literally walk around the benches of the contestants, and if I find dark chocolate on there, or someone's got, apricots on one bench, and then your next strawberries. And then when you're really starving, the crew have always got a really naughty selection of everything. And then someone will have a bag of salt and vinegar crisps open. So you don't take the bag, but you help yourself to theirs.
Right. So it sounds like not particularly well nutritionally balanced snacking during the day. And in terms of your midlife body and your exercise and everything else that's going on, have you noticed your... Because I think one of the things that I've noticed is I don't get as hungry as I used to, even when I've exercised.
Yes.
Have you noticing that?
Yes, absolutely. And I literally having to force myself to eat. Especially after exercising, I have more of an appetite later in the day. In the morning, not so much. So, yeah, I have noticed.
Have
that
you started
too.
Skipping breakfast then?
I try not to, I try not to, even if it's to have some fruit and yogurt. Yeah, and only because my vitamins say I need to have something in my stomach.
And in terms of health and, your food, obviously is healthy food. But I mean, how much of that do you think about these days and kind of, when you're looking at new recipes?
Healthy food with new recipes is very different to, eating at home. Home is much more healthy. But, the restaurant is about enjoyment, isn't it? It's about indulgence,
So that's not really on the agenda.
No. So lots of butter where it's possible. But, we do, even saying that, we have a lot of vegetarian options and stuff always on the menu.
But at home you eat differently?
Yes. Well, I do. My husband does it. He's French, He's got a selection of cheese every time.
Lots of cheese, lots of butter.
Yeah, lots of cheese, lots of butter.
But you know what? It's weird. I was in France last week and ate like a queen. You know, we had some fantastic meals, went to amazing restaurants and ate a lot more French bread than I thought, you know, was good for me. And because the bread is just so amazing when the boulangerie opens up. And yeah, it's just incredible.
All the natural bread. It's just so great.
A few glasses of rosé. I was in Provence, you know, so one has to kind of, you know, do that when you're down there. And then I came home and I'd lost a kilo. I was like, how has that happened? And so my husband and I were scratching our heads because he thought he'd put on about 5 kilos and he hadn't either. And we did do a lot of walking and a lot of exercise and things as well, but no more than we do at home. And then we kind of thought, actually, we didn't really start kind of troughing until about 1 o'clock because we kind of had late mornings, didn't really have a breakfast because we were just coffeeing and stuff. So we decided the reason was because we must have done some kind of weird fast by accident that on our window. We ate a lot, but in a kind of 8-9 hours.
In a certain window.
Yeah.
God. So that's wonderful.
Either that or the butter and the cheese is really what my body needs, which is fantastic news. I'm not sure I want to keep this going.
Give me the name of what you were eating.
But I did think, gosh, maybe all along I'm supposed to live in the south of France.
Absolutely. But I guess also the quality of what you were eating, you know, it's just much less processed stuff going into your food. You know, exactly. It's done quite simply, but beautiful ingredients. And even the bread, you know, the bread there is so natural.
Yeah, totally. And it, you know that because it doesn't last, does it? It kind of,
it's going to go off the next morning.
You're not going to be able to use it the next day because it's got no additives into it. So it's, and actually when you're only having a little bit of cheese, you don't need to eat the whole block, do you? You know, you can have a bit of cheese and you get such amazing flavours. I'm making myself very hungry.
And I think that's what they do right, isn't it? They do it in moderation. And I tend to think, no, I'm fine. No cheese. And then I'll get to Sunday and I'll eat, you know, half a brie or something because I have because I haven't had it all week. I'll make up for it on Sunday.
People talk about binge drinking. You're a binge cheeser, which is a whole different thing.
A binge cheeser.
So in terms of fitting in that exercise now, you said before it was always snatched. What's your go-to for exercise?
I'm first thing in the morning.
You know, and what is it? Like, what do you do?
A lot of weight training. And also there's a group of us. And then last 3-4 years, just pre-COVID, I met a bunch of amazing, crazy women just like myself, all of us, you know, over our 40s, just working out together, giving each other that, you know, shit, you know, when you come on, is that
offloading.
The best you can lift? Absolutely. But also, you know, it was an escape. Like I could be having the worst day and then be there and these three women are there, you can, you know, laugh it off or, you know, just pass a comment and then you just get on with it, with the exercising. So we have a group chat, for example, and I've been really bad because I haven't been back, say, in 2 months because I've done a lot of traveling and filming, but I have a gym at home. But our group chat is who's there this morning, and you know, it's like tick, 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 coming, and I'm back in on Monday, and I know they're going to give me grief for how much I'm lifting, but I've been secretly training while I've been away. Well, not
they'll
secretly,
know.
I've been keeping it.
They'll know. That sounds great. That's such a good tip as well for people, isn't it? Because
Absolutely. That
camaraderie.
Find that camaraderie. Find your people that just, you know, make you feel good. And we're all above 40. I mean, Jackie has just turned 60 today. And it's just giving each other that confidence, you know, that you want, everyone wants to feel good. Everyone, you know, wants to feel good. And then you have your down day, someone will come in and said, oh, I just drank all weekend. you know, I feel terrible, you know, the thing. And, you know, and you just sort of get each other through it and you just have a laugh. And, you know, and then finding this network of women in the last few years has been such a wonderful thing to have. I can't tell you. And they're so strong as well.
this is a theme that comes through from a lot of episodes with women, actually. I mean, Lorraine Candy talks about her swimming. You know, she does a lot of open water, cold water swimming, and how there's always a group of women around who kind of, you know, push each other on and to do that. And I similarly swim in a lake with a group of women. And I think it seems to be a common or a shared experience that a lot of midlife women feel when that becomes to movement. It's nice doing some of it in a group.
I absolutely agree. I agree. And, you know, I've gone to the gym for years and never felt so comfortable and happy to find my group, you know, my fit crew is what we're called.
Is that what the WhatsApp group's called?
That's the fit crew.
Nice.
You know, it's a friend's little studio gym, and then it's like, you know, maximum it's like 12 people in a class sort of thing. And, you know, the poor guys that do our classes.
Oh, they are allowed in.
Yeah, we let a few of them in. You know, our friend Jamie, he's a policeman, for example. You know, he gets so much grief from us. You know, but it's such a joy and a release to have that. And I really feel that my crew there really got me through the last year, leaving MasterChef. The announcement came out that morning. I was in the gym and I was an absolutely crying wreck when that came out, you know, and the girls were there and they sort of just got me through and like, right, we got this, we're going to smash it, you know, it's happened. So it's my network.
Yeah, and I think that's really important as well, that they're outside of everything else that you do, you know, because obviously you've got your team, but you have to be strong for your team.
Yeah, that's it. And I think why we gel so much, they're just away from my world. You know, they get family, you know, and everything that's normal about me, but everything else, we know that comes with the package. So, you know, it's such it's mad. And they're also very protective, you know, when I'm out with them, you know, and we're just having a nice time and people sort of try and get into that. They're very protective. So I'm very lucky to find them. Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You always appear to be such a driven when I say ambitious, I mean this in a positive sense. I always think ambitious, you know, when it's attributed to a woman, it's in the past, it's had just negativity. But, you know, I admired that about you, that you, you know, kind of forged this incredible career. And it was only when I listened to your Desert Island Discs that I fully kind of understood where some of that came from, and your extraordinary childhood and your parents moving ahead of you to New Zealand and the time that you spent with your aunts in Samoa and what you learned from that. And, you know, then, as I say, traveling across the world as well, how you did to kind of carry on and keep pushing that incredible career that you have now, which so many times could have become derailed, couldn't it? Things that were going on in your life. And it feels like you've had kind of almost two or three lives in, you know, in that period of time. You've packed so much.
Does it show?
You've just packed so much stuff into your life. And one of the things that kind of struck me was interesting when you said, when you were first on television in the UK, and the kind of perception of you as somebody who gave, you know, quite hard criticism to people when you were on MasterChef The Professionals, and you were a bit surprised, kind of going, hang on a minute, this is what I've had to deal with my whole life. This is what it's like in a kitchen. And realizing that there was this, almost this tabloid persona that was being put upon you, but the real person was kind of going, well, that's, you know, that's just me giving professional. And you said, which I found interesting, that you'd kind of had to realize you had to step back slightly in the way that, you know, you address those situations. And that is a real kind of learning curve, isn't it, in the public eye, dealing with all of that stuff that most people in their careers deal with behind closed doors, don't they? People don't deliver it to the world, that news, and being a foreigner, if you like, you know, culturally kind of coming from a different place. That must have been, I would say, looking back, one of the most challenging periods for you to try and get your head around how to be a public persona as well as a private person.
Yes, that was something to adjust to and get used to at the beginning. It was quite frightening.
Do you have a protective layer because of that, do you think, now?
Yes, I think so. I believe so. I think you need to have that in our industry, when you're a public figure, you've got to have that. And you're also just keeping an eye out on what's coming out. I'm very careful who I give interviews to now, you know, and on how easily things are manufactured about someone's persona, just taken from what they've seen on television, you know, whether it be that or an article taken out of one line that you've said. So it did affect me, you know, when, you know, you'd give an interview and we talked about something and I would have said, you know, for example, yeah, it's hard in the industry for women, especially if they look at, you know, having a family, you know, you need to consider that in, you know, as a chef. And I remember Paper taking that line and saying, MasterChef judge tells contestants choose career over family. You know, it couldn't be any more, you know, different than that. Yeah. Yeah. You know, so you've had to grow a thick skin and realize this is what your life is, but you don't have to accept it and you don't have to play with it. You know, you ignore it and you move on. Yeah.
Do you think at the beginning, I'm only thinking back to my kind of early stages in my career, I was probably trying to please everybody in those situations, you know, and while I would say to myself, it doesn't matter what people, you know, say in the paper, I know the truth, that there is a bit of you that is juggling and working out how to compartmentalize that. And maybe,
yeah,
you know, it just...
Absolutely. I found it very disturbing at first, quite upsetting that someone could do that and realizing that. And then, like you say, you sort of find a way to balance it. And, you know, being told to know your truth, you know, you didn't say it and believing that, you know, was the main thing, and learning to ignore it. And I think, you know, it just adds fuel to the fire if you were to suddenly, you know, go back and attack it on that when you know it's not true.
And did your daughter, because I think back to my very similar age, my kids are 17, and if they ever read anything, they'd be really, you know, Mummy, but somebody said this thing and it's not true. And I was like, I'm fine, it's okay. And it was interesting, they would get more upset almost when they were kind of 11 and 12.
Yeah, they she would. Although she used to say, yeah, everyone's scared of you, Mum.
Mine say that to me now. So
yeah, it's like, no, don't come, Mum, to sports day. Everyone's scared of you.
It has its benefits, clearly.
Yes,
but she knows the real you, and she knows a different side to you, I guess.
And also, especially when my daughter was also younger, she sort of sensed me get tense, you know, if a lot of people would come and start asking for photos, and I would tense up only because I'm getting protective of my daughter. You know, I'm sure you do, if you've got your daughter and someone suddenly, you know, pulls a phone out and I maybe grab her hand. But the same would then happen with her. She'd suddenly get very protective, and then you'd see her suddenly put her arm across me, you know, or yeah. So it does affect you in ways that you just never thought it would be. Yeah.
Do you think that as a high profile female chef and restaurateur and TV chef, do you think that the media has treated you any differently than some of your male contemporaries?
I think it's calmed down a lot. When I first started, you know, it was all a bit of a shock for everyone to have a woman have an opinion about kitchens and food, you know, and so it was always sort of compared to Ramsay. You know, it was not a bad comparison. He's a brilliant chef, but I know why they would say that. Or Simon Cowell, you know, it's like, really? It's the best you can do? You know, there's some other hard-ass women out there as well. But yeah, the best they could do or come up with was compare me to men, because it was the norm, wasn't it, that they could give an opinion. So over the years, I think it's very much mellowed and not so much.
And what about the men themselves? Do you have like WhatsApp groups with your favourite chefs? You know, do you all kind of give each other bits of support, or is it so competitive that, you know, you kind of polite?
No, everyone in the industry knows each other really well. You know, you sort of support each other. I mean, you know, we could go yonks without seeing each other. Tom Kerridge, for example, you know, I always have a soft spot for Tom and his wife, Beth, you know, and you can meet up again. It's just like rolling back time, you know, and no, I mean, the industry, and I think it has a bad rep because of what's being captured on cameras and that, but you know, the respect out there for everyone, the support. You know, if you hear someone's having a, you know, a tough time, you completely understand what they're going through.
And would you, with what your experience is and your husband's as well in the industry, do you think your daughters looked and thought, this is a great place to work? I'd like to be in this industry? Or is it?
Oh, hell no. I mean, when she was younger, I mean, she used to have a lot of fun here in the restaurant kitchen, you know, and then she'd come and spend the weekends. And now if she's here, I mean, it's basically just eat everything she wants and then have mocktails in the bar. My daughter's very musical and very artistic, so
that, and you're encouraging that. You're kind
absolutely
of, yeah,
yeah.
Don't come
yeah,
into,
yeah.
yeah don't you
well,
stay
not, not, yeah,
stay out the kitchen.
Yeah, stay out the kitchen.
And for what you've seen over the time that you've been in this country, and I was thinking that in this week specifically when we've had this story that has emerged about a newsreader, things in his private life were exposed in the Sun newspaper, and we now know that that person is Hugh Edwards. And I've thought a lot about the philosophical side of all of this, and have we got worse? Is this now, have we reached a kind of peak of wanting to know so much about people's private lives, and this almost like this, you know, this appetite that doesn't seem to be sated in people, that, you know, the click bar of shame, all of that. And I've always lived pretty much in this country, a couple of times away, but not come in like you did as somebody who's grown up in a different culture. From what you've seen over these decades, have we got worse? Has it always been like this? Do you think we're in a dangerous place right now?
I think we are, and social media is a huge part of that. I believe in society and people being able to just be nasty and attack and tear people down. It's frightening. I think it's frightening. Absolutely, you know, and there's so much going on. And also see that this just seems to be such an appetite to see someone get torn down.
Mm.
It's like a pack mentality almost.
Back home in New Zealand and maybe Australia as well, is that a thing there? Do you see that in?
I don't know. I've been here almost 25 years. Mm. This is all I know now.
Yeah.
But I've seen, you know, I think like yourself, you know, it's something we've all watched
get
grow.
Worse.
Mm. Yes, we, you know, sort of watching it grow, and you sort of almost feel, who's next?
Mm.
You know,
and the moral standards that people are kind of made to almost live up to, and have to, you know, especially if you're on the BBC, which you are, you know, and I am, that it's an added layer almost of kind of pressure to live up to some kind of idealistic kind of lifestyle.
No, absolutely. I mean, you are doing something you love, something, you know, that puts you in the public. So does that mean you shouldn't be able to have the privacy of being a normal person when you're not doing that? You know, it's almost like you're not allowed to. You have to be held to accountability for everything.
And in a business like the restaurant industry as well, when people kind of are putting reviews, you know, online all the time and things like that, again, it's that kind of, you know, it's like if you had 20 really positive reviews, but there was one in there that was a little bit negative, and a newspaper wants to pull that out, and the headline is, you know, your restaurant is, you know, blah, 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 whatever the review is. It's the ability to be able to do that now, which, you know, and that's an example in your specific industry, but that can happen. And I've seen it happen with regard to TV presenters and things. You know, there might be one person who's commented negatively about them, and all the positive ones kind of doesn't matter, because that's the article that they
that's
jump
the one.
On. Yeah.
They pick the one negative comment on it.
And you, when you look at reviews, or do you look at reviews?
When, no, I don't.
No. Is it healthier?
When we first started, yeah, it's healthier not to. And enough of my team look at them that I don't need to. You know? I've got enough that goes on in the day without being distracted.
No, I think you're right. It's like opening a Pandora's box, isn't it?
Yeah.
Think, well,
no, I don't need to know.
I was reading something the other day. I can't remember who it was. I'm talking about the TV industry now and how producers are so kind of aligned to what people are saying on social media, and actually, you know, losing almost their own, sometimes losing their own opinion and their own insight because they're so bothered about.
Oh, absolutely. Now there's certain words you can't even say because it might
trigger
somebody.
Yeah. And do you get briefed now about things like that?
Oh, yes. Now you get a briefing on everything. So you, at times, feel you need to tiptoe around things, or you need to check that you can say that, you know, because what was presumed, you know, once upon a time as funny and a joke is no longer as simple as that.
Has that bled into the kitchen as well? That, you know, because I imagine the kitchens that you worked in 25
oh,
years
the
ago.
The kitchen has changed a long time ago, but, you know, the culture in my kitchen, I don't stand for any BS or any violence, bullying, you know, and if I don't cap it off, you know, you just let it run rife. And so anything I hear, I stamp on it straight away. And I believe in a happy kitchen. You know, I like being positive and having a good time. Doing what we do and cooking is something that you have to enjoy and love. If you're having a bad day, it will affect what you're producing. So I always believe, you know, that, you know, you start service, riling the team up. Come on, let's have a great service. You know, it's almost Sunday. And they're like, thanks, chef, it's Tuesday. you know, and it's important to have a good feeling, you know, so anything, you know, even if my head chef, for example, is having a bad day, I will pull them aside, you know, before service, you know, or my sous chef, whoever it is that's running the show. Like, look, you want to have a good night. You've got a face of thunder, mm-hmm. all right, put it aside. Otherwise, no, because it affects the whole team.
Of course, yeah,
you
the
know,
energy.
How you are, yeah, it affects the whole team. I don't want to always be smiling, you know, but how I project, the energy you project, it affects your whole team, and it's important. Yeah, I really do believe in that.
So we know that you're into your weights and obviously have to have a lot of energy to do what you do. And you have three dogs as well, who
yes.
I'm sure take a bit of energy in terms of walks, but also I imagine give you a lot back in terms of the serotonin as well. Tell us about your dogs.
My boys, my babies. Finn is our eldest. He's 9, just turned 9. He's a boxer. And it's quite funny because I posted a video Instagram post about him and a candle, and he had his favorite treat, which I make. It's frozen yogurt with strawberry and banana with a candle in it.
Oh my goodness.
And people are like, where's his steak and stuff? But they didn't realize was he had a heart scan the next day, so he wasn't allowed to eat anything heavy.
You wanted him to pass?
Yeah, he was having a heart scan because he has a heart burner. So he had the little candle. So Finn's 9, he's a boxer, and everything came back clear.
Good,
you'll have
good.
Another check in 6 months. Followed by our second dog, which is the French bulldog, Cole. He's the boss of the three, of course. He'll be 6 this year. Uh-huh. And then we got a baby boxer. He will be 1 in August. So we got 3 of them, and all of them are brindles. And Harry, who is a bit more ginger than the other two brindles. So, we called him Harry.
Well, they sound absolutely gorgeous. So I'm delighted that I think you're going to like our expert with a twist, I'd say, today. Calvin Mudd is coming on The Midpoint, who is, I think, the man who started Canicross in Cornwall. He's certainly very heavily involved in Canicross. Not sure if you've ever heard of Canicross?
No, he can't. And that's how bad my jokes are. So we leave the jokes to Greg Wallace.
Really? Greg's jokes are better than that. No. So let's bring Calvin on now, and he can tell us a bit more about Canicross, which sounds like a brilliant way of incorporating your dogs into your exercise routine. And for a lot of people listening with dogs, I think they'll quite like the sound of that. But I'll say hello to Calvin Mudd. Hello.
Hi, Gabby.
Hi, thanks for coming on The Midpoint, Calvin. So Canicross, this intrigued me because I love dogs. Monica's got dogs. She loves dogs. And we all like to kind of, you know, go out for walks with our dogs, but we can do a lot more when it comes to exercise with our dogs. Tell me a little bit about Canicross.
So Canicross is cross-country running with your dogs, where the human wears a special bout and the dog wears a special harness to allow full movement. And you're attached by a bungee line, so it takes out the shock from you and the dog. The idea is that the dog assists you to run.
So the dog is almost like pulling you.
Yeah, so basically, I started Canicrossing 12, 13 years ago and purely started running because of Canicross. Because people say it's cheating, but you've got to keep up with the dog. So I've never been a runner, so... With a dog, I can sort of compete with some of the people in my age category. Yeah, so the difference is probably over a kilometre a minute quicker. with the dog.
Really? Just because of the dog?
Yeah.
And what breed of dog do you run with?
So I've got a crossbreed, which is I've got a couple of crossbreeds. One's a Weimaraner Vizsla Cross. He was a rescue. And I've got the newest dog is a Weimaraner German Shorthead Pointer Cross. You can canny cross with any dog, whether it be an 8 kilo Cocker Spaniel to a maybe not a Great Dane. The gun dogs are kind of the breed of choice in this country. They do, you can get a purpose-bred dog now. They've been breeding them in Europe for some time and they're starting to be more and more in the UK. They're called Graysters, so they're Norwegian pointers cross with a greyhound. So you end up, you've got a dog with great speed and obviously the endurance of a German Shorthead Pointer.
Now, a lot of people listening are thinking, well, yeah, I go out for a run with my dog. So what's the difference between canny cross and just going out, you know, putting a lead on your dog and going for a run? What does the equipment do?
So basically, obviously, if you've put a lead around the dog, around its neck, and the dog's starting to pull you, which there's lots of pulling dogs out there, you quite often see people getting dragged along the path. So it's not really comfortable for the dog. So with a proper harness, they're obviously able to pull into the harness. People say, you know, oh, have you got a harness that stops the dog pulling? Well, you don't have a harness to stop the dog pulling because you want them to pull you. So they allow them full movement of their shoulders. And then you've got a belt around your waist, which, again, if you've got a dog pulling you on your shoulder, you know, pulling you your arm, it's going to hurt your arm. Where when they're pulling around your waist, you've obviously got all your weight control. Your hands are free to move freely.
To move properly. Yeah, because that's the problem, isn't it? If people are using a lead, you can't really run. I mean, when I run with my dog, we tend not to be on the lead because I run them kind of the country. Do you know what I mean? So we're doing it kind of more freestyle so that we're both going at the pace that we want. Although I sometimes think that she's going at the pace that I am rather than the pace she wants. She'd rather run a bit quicker. And what about the kind of other element to this, which I guess takes it into a sport, competition? You were talking about being a minute quicker. I'm guessing, therefore, that you're going out and you're pitting yourself against other people and their dogs.
Yeah. So canny cross is 5K. That's basically canny cross. It's a great thing because it's usually over within half an hour. They're generally over 2 days. So we run 5K on a Saturday, 5K on a Sunday. Saturday is all time trial. And then on the Sunday, it's seeded.
Wow. So this is growing.
Yeah. I mean, the unofficial world record for 5K has been done by a canny crosser. So, but obviously it's with a dog. So he's being assisted to run, but obviously he's got to keep his, you know, you've got to move your legs. People say it's cheating. And I've run with, you know, when you've got a dog 10 kilos and I'm 80 kilos, you know, the dog's not really going to give you a lot of assistance. But if you've got a dog that's 30 kilos and it's trained, then it can make a big difference.
Well, it's also down to your fitness as well, because if your lungs aren't doing it, you can't keep up with your dog, can you? So I guess you've got to be training together. And that training wise, is there anything people should be kind of concerned about with regard to their dog? How much, you know, can a dog take? Can the dog take more than the human will ever take in terms of training? Do you have to worry about that?
Yeah, it's very high. Everyone's got their thing. We would train. So this time of year, because of the humidity, not so much of the temperature, but the humidity is a big problem for dogs, running dogs. In the continent, their canny cross season is in the summer, because in the winter they've got snow. But in the UK, our season starts in September and January. It's all done by May.
The nice thing about it, which is why I wanted to bring you on, was because a lot of the midpoint experts and people that we talk to, we're talking about longevity a lot. Community is really important, and exercising sometimes with other people is very important to motivate people. So what I loved about this is that it feels like a community. It feels like, you know, some of the things that people enjoy most in their life, dogs are involved. And I guess you're meeting and training with new people all the time.
Yeah, we find that generally the stats are there on our social media. It's middle-aged women, because I think what it is they kind of have children and then they get a dog and they maybe don't have the confidence to run without the dog. I don't know. It seems to give them confidence to run with their dog. And that, we run classes all year, obviously. Even in the winter, we're running head torches. And a lot of the, like I say to my partner who teaches it, these people wouldn't be here if we didn't do this, because it's that thing of, The dogs, you know, some dogs will lead, some dogs will run on. Both of my dogs, they'll run on their own. They don't need anybody to chase. But some dogs, as in a pack, in with it, go back to the sled world. Some of the dogs, they don't pull when they're not with the group. But yeah, it's a great thing to enjoy, because basically what I say to people is, in the winter, it's raining, it's horrible weather, the dog's got to go out, and the best thing you do is put on a harness, put on a canicross belt, put a head torch out, and go and run 5K with the dog, because then you're done, you're feeling a lot better about yourself, the dog's done as well. Every dog needs a job. A lot of rescue dogs seem to end up in canicross homes.
Really?
We had a dog a year old who'd become a bit destructive at the people that had him, and he's absolutely fine now because he's got a job.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, I think, you know, you've hit the nail on the head as to why it's so successful there. I think it's that sense of community, isn't it? And also, which I've always been a fan of, you know, I don't run loads, but when I do, I want to take a dog with me, partly for safety. Sometimes I'm running thinking, gosh, I'm in the middle of nowhere here. And I think when I've got my dog with me, I feel a bit more secure. And also, you're getting two jobs done for the price of one, which is amazing. And by the sounds of it, an extra added bonus, a bit of competition as well. So I'm all up for Canicross. Thank you so much, Calvin, for coming on, and good luck in your next race.
Thank you very much.
So do you run with your boys? Do any of them like a jog?
I used to love running with Finn. Finn is my running buddy. But a couple of years ago, I developed a Baker's cyst in my knee, which is really painful.
I had one of those, but it went. Did yours not?
I had to have mine drained. Oh. Yeah, so that has caused me, you know, every now and then I get quite a bit of pain in that kneecap. But no,
so
oh my
no
gosh.
More running.
Yeah. And then also I got plantar on my left, you know, so yeah.
Is this, do you think, being on your feet
running
all the time as a chef?
Yes.
Does it have its physical challenges?
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and of course, with me and my injuries, not resting properly to allow myself time to recover. So issues just gradually got worse. But I still love running.
Do you know how many steps on average chefs do when they're on a service? Is it thousands and thousands?
Yes. Yeah. You know, especially you're running up and down the stairs, and my younger ones, thousands more than me.
But you've done all those steps, literally and figuratively.
I mean, I've done a lifetime's worth of steps.
Talk about your other job briefly before we say goodbye? Because traveling around the world and going to some of the greatest and most unusual hotels that are on the planet is literally, I would think 99% of the people listening to this would say that would be one of their dream jobs. So tell me what it's like when the email drops saying, are you interested?
Absolutely. And oh my gosh, when that happened, I've just finished filming my fifth series of amazing hotels, but the timing could have been more perfect. I was about to open the restaurant and a crane fell through the roof and everything got pushed back by like 3-4 months. And literally the next day I got a phone call saying, oh, the BBC are thinking of doing this new travel show. I'm not sure if you can do it with the restaurant open. I was like, no, wait. I can. So whoever threw that crane across the top.
And here you are five series later.
Yeah, here we are five series later. And still, you know, I've always loved travel with cooking, learning about different cultures, different people, different food is what I love about it. So it is my dream thing to do. It's a dream job. Yeah.
And it was with Giles Corran. It's now going to be with Rob Rinder, who has been on this podcast as well. And how much when you're filming do you do together? And how much is it kind of, you know, do you actually spend some time together?
We do a few days on our own and then we have some time together. And with Rob, I've had more time together with Rob. And I think it was just sort of help build that connection together and just, you know, to get us working more together. So that's been really lovely.
And in terms of the hotels, because you're there filming, obviously, and talking about them, I imagine they all treat you brilliantly. Every hotel you go in.
They're all very wonderful. They're all very disappointed that I don't do enough in the hotel or get to experience more of the hotel with the schedule. You know, they actually, people are like, wow, you're actually really busy. It's like, yeah. I mean, filming out in Puglia, for example, I had one day where we were filming in the evening. So I had the morning and didn't start until 2:30. And so the whole week, this place we were filming, it had two beaches. You could see it in the distance. And I said, okay, on that morning, I'm going to go to the beach. And I woke up and it was downpour.
Sod's law, I think that's called.
Sod's law, it's called, absolutely. You know, and I was so looking forward to it. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a thing that a lot of these hotels find is they keep saying, oh, did you go to the spa? Did you try this? It was like, no, I'm sorry, no. I haven't had time.
But when you go to other hotels for yourself, do people now pull out all the stops? Because I imagine doing a show about hotels, they'd want you to love everything about that hotel.
Yeah, you know, they do. And then also, you know, you sort of say, look, I just want to chill. Don't worry. We're not, you know, I'm not judging you. You don't need to go on an excursion. So I happily sit here.
If somebody's listening and they kind of go, right, I'm going to pull out all the stops. I'm going to go to the greatest hotel that Monica Galetti's been to. Where's your absolute must?
There's been so many for different reasons.
Throw us one you've enjoyed so far.
Yeah, okay. Ones we've enjoyed so far. I've been to Sri Lanka for the first time. Culture, food, people, and then an amazing hotel to go with it. Right. See, I haven't named the hotel. So
okay, we'll have to do some research
amazing.
And go and look back at that episode then. So Sri Lanka was a big revelation for you.
For me this year. I mean, Croatia, for example, I did that a couple of years ago. I'd never been to Croatia before. The hotel was brand new, so modern. Yet within 10 minutes walking distance was beautiful little town, seaside town, you know, and I love that, you know, when you sort of go and you get immersed outside of the hotel. So Croatia was a big hit for me as well. It's probably one of the few times when I didn't want to share the hotel with the rest of the world. I was like, do we have to do this one?
Do we have to tell people?
Yeah.
Well, look, I know you're back on MasterChef The Professionals after a year off there. If you need a year off hotels, just give them my number.
You're my girl.
You can have it back. I promise you, I'll just keep the seat warm. Okay. So if you need to do anything else to the restaurant or,
you know what? If Rob doesn't behave, I'll put you in instead of Rob. We'll be on fire.
You've been warned, Rob. Monica, it's been so lovely chatting to you because I feel like you've given some really good tips and advice with things that you've done in midlife, things that are working for you, whether it's the women that you're training with, taking some time out, pausing, reevaluating, you know, and getting the joy for what you do right front and center. So thank you for that and for being so honest with us. And best of luck with everything going forwards. Just go from strength to strength.
I hope it was all right.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Monica is just great, isn't she? I love chatting to her, and she's made me a little bit hungry as well. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review the podcast wherever you listen to us. It really helps more Midpointers find the show. And if you want to connect with the Midpoint community a little bit more often, or even make suggestions about topics you'd like me to cover here, simply join the Midpointers Facebook page. I'm really grateful to you for listening, to Monica and Calvin for being such excellent guests, and to Spiritland Productions for putting this episode together. I hope you can join me next time. Bye-bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.